Wow, we are talking about some text messages from hell, are we not? Wait until you see these things. I'll tell you, a whole new set of questions are being asked right now as a result. And you know what else? KGP over at the White House, that would be Karine Jean-Pierre, she's overwhelmed because not even the mainstream media can totally ignore these things. I mean, that's how bad it is getting, folks. It's so good to have you all here. We're going to talk about all of that, plus the Navy. The Navy knew, apparently on Monday, that there had been this explosion, and yet somehow allowed that whole media circus to continue. Hopes were so high, still right through Thursday when we finally got the news. So why is that? I think we got to ask those questions right now. Bud Light's out with a new commercial, a desperate attempt to salvage its customers. But good luck. The stock's at a new low. We'll talk about that. And America really is increasingly looking as though it's in decline. Heck, the NBA, number one NBA pick for the draft, he's from France. Meanwhile, another study just came out showing American students are just sinking. Worst level we've seen, like going back to the history of when they first implemented these studies on kids. So what's that about? I am going to be joined today by Tim Barton. I'm very excited about this because do you know that he has the largest collection of founding fathers' documents, the largest private collection of anywhere in the world? Like, you got to go to the Smithsonian to see anything that would rival it. So we're going to talk about preserving America's history and how important that is for our young people so that we continue being number uno, number one in the world. So great to have you here. This is a live show today. So many of you, I actually emailed and told you I was going to be here live because you've asked me to do that. And so if you're on that list, you got the email and hopefully you're coming because of that. If not, go over and sign up at trishreganshow.com. There's a little pop-up. You can sign up for my email, and we'll make sure that we tell you about the times that we are here live because it's a great chance for all of us to get together, for all of us to join the chat, which I'm looking at right now, and I will get to momentarily as soon as I have a chance to play for you some of the comments that came from the press secretary there at the White House earlier this afternoon. Seeing so many familiar faces, good to see you. Familiar names for sure here on the program today, which is coming to you live. I should point out that if you are watching live, thank you for being here. Make sure that you subscribe to the channel if you would. It's really important. Subscribe to YouTube. I'm here on YouTube as well as Facebook every single day, and that would be great. But the other place I'd love for you to go if you haven't already would be over to Apple Podcasts. Just follow the show there. That's the full audio version of the show. Follow it. Leave it a rating if you would. 5 stars is always a good thing. Anyway, like I said, great to have you here. Let's get started. Off to the races. I have something that you need to see. So, you know, unless you've been living under a rock, you may have heard something about these text messages. A text in particular from Hunter Biden that was discovered, and you know, the House committee has come forward with this, and it has been released into the public, and it really does kind of suggest something that doesn't feel right, right? That doesn't seem right. Because in this text, and I'll show it to you in just a second, you'll see what I mean. In this text, you basically see Hunter Biden sort of insinuating to his Chinese business associate or whatever you'd want to call him. The guy actually was a member of the CCP and also had a business associate himself that was effectively running the intel operation for all of China. So that gives you an idea of the caliber of people that Hunter Biden was corresponding with. And he's pressuring the guy to give him some money. And he's like, you know, if you don't give it, well, there's going to be hell to pay. So this is coming back to haunt him in a really big way. Take a look at Excuse me? Seriously? Hunter Biden, you sending a text like that? And by the way, apparently he wasn't kidding, because the Washington Free Beacon is reporting that there is some metadata showing a picture of Hunter Biden there at his dad's Delaware home, apparently standing with some family members by a Corvette, on the exact day that that text was sent. We're talking about what? Summer in 2017. So this is not looking very good. And what's amazing is that fortunately, even the White House press corps seems to be understanding that this is not looking very good. Amazing last night. You know, everybody was so consumed, which is why we have to talk about that, so consumed with the sub story that it sucked all the oxygen out of the airwaves, right? It was all the focus, of course, yesterday. And we got the devastating news that the five souls on board had passed away. Yet somehow the media just ignored this whole thing, right? They ignored the text. And in fact, the only mainstream media publication to talk about it last night on the evening news would have been actually NBC. So you get to credit them with at least mentioning it. So now a day has gone by. Karine Jean-Pierre is out there to meet the press corps. And here was her reaction when they started pushing her, as they should, on this text.
Can I follow up on that?
Okay. No, I just called in somebody. Go ahead.
So Curley wouldn't answer James's question, though. Are you going to answer the question? I mean, not a reasonable question to ask, but the President of the United States was involved, as this message seems to suggest, in some sort of a coercive conversation for business dealings by his son. Is that something, if he wasn't, then maybe you should tell us.
So here's the thing, I appreciate the question. I believe my colleague at the White House counsel has answered this question already, has dealt with this, has made it very clear. I just don't have anything to share outside of what my colleagues have shared, and so I would refer you to him and the DOJ. Just not gonna comment from here. What I can tell you is I know that my colleague has dealt with this. He addressed this at the White House counsel. I just don't have anything else to share.
I just answered the question. Okay. Was the president involved in the shakedown attempt?
Stephen, I just answered the question. It's not up to you how I answer the question. I just answered the question by telling you my colleagues at the White House counsel has dealt with this, and I would refer you to them.
Okay. Go talk to my lawyer, effectively. You see, that went on, and there was a Daily Caller reporter that said, well, actually, no, he hasn't said anything about that text message specifically. So they haven't gotten anything from the White House counsel. Karine Jean-Pierre knows that she can't really answer that question because this is not looking good. It is not looking good for Joe Biden and his son. No matter how much he wants to tell you he didn't do anything wrong and he's so proud of him. I mean, he's proud of him for tax evasion. He's proud of him for being on drugs and then going and getting a weapon and not having the proper license. I mean, how are you proud of that? This is going to be a very big story. Now, people are innocent until proven guilty. But in this particular case, I'd like to know why. We're not getting more in the way of answers. He's guilty on a couple of misdemeanor fraud charges, tax charges. I don't think so. I think there's a whole lot more here. And I think that's why it was being investigated to begin with. So according to one of the whistleblowers that's come forward, Gary Shipley, it turns out that the reason they first stumbled across all of this back in 2017 was actually because they were looking into pornographic ring, an international amateur pornographic ring. And so the FBI was onto that, which somehow led them to Hunter. Oh yeah, Joe Biden, you're really proud of your boy, huh? So that's what got them to Hunter in the first place. And then the floodgates opened and they had to keep investigating. And yet at some point, everything stopped. And this is why the whistleblowers are upset, because they wanted to bring charges in D.C. and apparently in California where he had been living. But no. He suddenly was, they were not allowed to do that. And the whistleblowers say that Not only were they surprised, they thought David Weiss was surprised as well. This would be the U.S. attorney that was leading the investigation. So this has come up just a short time ago, and Attorney General Merrick Garland is like, no, nothing to see here. No, David Weiss had total say, total control. Watch.
Do you think, just to follow on that, do you think that a special counsel, can you explain the rationale for not appointing a special counsel in this case?
Mr. Weiss had, in fact, more authority than a special counsel would have. He had and has complete authority, as I said, to bring a case anywhere he wants in his discretion.
Really? Well, then why is it that the whistleblowers are telling us that he couldn't, that they were just told, you know what, it's not happening? Could it possibly have been? I'm just throwing it out there. Could it possibly have been because his father was president of the United States of America? I wonder. You know, I've heard some things about the big guy. And they include the fact that he does keep a grudge. And I've talked to Democrats that have said this, and they've known him for a long time. And they're like, yeah, he's one mean, nasty, you can fill in the rest. And I was sort of surprised. I will keep confidential the source that told me this. But it sort of just shocked me that somebody who is a Democrat like Joe Biden is and should be supporting him really said, you know, the guy's not very, very nice. And he said he holds a grudge forever. So like father, like son. I don't know. Let's go back to that text message, shall we? Again, this is the smoking gun that no one wants to talk about. And if you look for it online, as I've tried several times just to keep double checking, it's hard to find. So here we go. Cough up some $100,000 or so to settle the matter. This is not looking good. Not looking good. I want to open it up to comments before we get to some of our other stories, including Bud Light's new commercial. Really, you know, this company ought to just give it up. I mean, it's game over for Bud Light, which is seeing yet again another low in its stock price. Before we do that, anyway, so good. This is Davey. Welcome back. Dominique, so good to see you. Liberty Matters. Great name. Great name. Liberty does matter. Liberty matters so much that we've got to start asking ourselves, what is going on in this environment where we can't really speak our minds, where we can't actually see justice through? And why is that happening? It's because, frankly, if you ask me, if we really drill down into it, there is a power center that is so extraordinary that really is trying to just bury anyone who doesn't subscribe to that train of thought. We're going to talk with the historian in a little bit about that coming up. But before we do, I want to tell you about a new company I have partnered with. I'm so excited about this. You know, you hear me talk a lot about news and politics and the economy. You don't always hear me talk about myself and the things that I do to keep myself healthy. So with that in mind, I actually work pretty hard on it. I take my health very, very seriously. I'm very particular with what I eat. I am at the gym every single day. Well, 5 days a week at the gym, working out, lifting, and I try to go for long, brisk walks every day. I'm a busy person. I am doing this here with you guys every day. The podcast takes a lot of time, a lot of prep. I have a team that I'm helping to shape the show, this whole team, this wonderful team. So it's a lot of responsibility, and it's why I have to keep myself focused, clear-headed, and energetic. Right? Energetic for all of you and for my family. So one of the things that I've added in, and so I'd like to take full credit, and the gym does matter, and lots of water matters, and all of these things, eating right, it's all very much sort of compounding on itself. But one of the things I have done is taken Strong Cell. maybe for like the last 5-6 weeks or so, and it has been tremendous. I think that my energy level has gone up, my focus has gone up, and I love it. I really love it. So I wanted to tell you about it. I'm so thrilled to partner with them. I mean, I'm lucky I get it for free because of the partnership, but you can get it at a special discount. I encourage you to go check it out. It's made with NADH, which is this wonderful, in my estimation, I'm not giving you any scientific information here, but they have it all on the website, but it helps us to rebuild our cellular structure. And in doing so, I really feel like after a couple of weeks, they say you got to give it 4 weeks, it makes a difference in terms of your energy levels, in terms of your ability to focus, et cetera. And of course, that helps with your overall health and your overall conditioning. So go check it out. You can get a 20% discount if you use code word Trish. Code word Trish. All right, I want to turn to Bud Light. Bud Light, which just no matter how much it tries, can't seem to get its act together. It has a new commercial. There we go. A brand new commercial. And this is after that song Good Times, but this is actually, I think, Bud Times that they're saying. And you see, oh, you know, everybody's having a good time. They're picnicking. They're at the beach. They're having just a blast. I think at some point you see them at a hammock party. Somebody falls over in the hammock. Oh, look at that. He's going to fall over. Maybe, maybe not. On his, yes, on his paddleboard. So it's all about how fun life is. Summer's great. You know, we do fun things. And we have a Bud Light. You know, the only problem is, guys, it's a little bit too late, just a little bit too late, because on April 1st, and I'm not going to play it for you again, but you know, it's like you can't get the image out of your head, right? The Dylan Mulvaney clip. And so consequently, they have seen their sales plummet. Latest numbers showing us sales are down 27% again for Bud Light in the latest week. And you have Modelo, which is owned by the American company, Constellation Brands, at least the U.S. rights to that Modelo. That's way up. So they've just traded their number one spot in America thanks to some very, you know, pompous marketing executives that thought they knew better. I told you this week about how they just won an award in Cannes, France for the most creative marketing of the year. Are you kidding me? Are you kidding me? Of course, in fairness, the award came out before the whole April 1st disaster. But many people were like, wait a second, shouldn't this Cannes festival, it's like the Oscars of the advertising industry, shouldn't they take it away? Well, they probably should have. I mean, considering that this is now the worst marketing event in the history, I think, of any company in modern times, they've now lost nearly $30 billion in market cap as a result. But no, they didn't take it away. They got the big award, and the CEO, not the CEO, the head of marketing went and gave a little speech and said it was very humbling. I would just say it's like total irony. So the stock price, which has been down considerably, fell again today. It's like trading down around $57 a share. I mean, I don't see things changing for this company anytime soon. And I think Americans have just kind of had it. You know, they just are finished with this. Finished. Well, you know, we've talked about how Americans are losing faith in institutions. Maybe Bud Light and Budweiser was one of those institutions. But we've also kind of lost some faith, not just in our politicians and in our banks and in the Federal Reserve, but now also possibly in the military. I mean, the military that's using a drag queen to recruit because recruiting levels are so low. Well, just look at the patriotism studies. Those are so low. Young kids don't feel as patriotic. So therefore, why would they actually want to go and join the military? Anyway, the military now is under fire because the Navy on Monday, apparently, and I guess it's good that they heard this, or heard the explosion from that submersible that was underwater, the Titan, rather aptly named, trying to look at the Titanic. And they never disclosed that to the media. So instead, we had all these search and rescue operations, millions and millions and millions of dollars were spent. The media went into a frenzy. Everybody was on the edge of their seat, hoping and praying that these people could be found. But the outcome of the story is that there was an implosion that happened when they started descending just, you know, shortly after that descent, a few hours after. And it killed them instantaneously. And the explosion was massive. And the reason it is believed that explosion happened was because the materials that were used, and James Cameron, actually, who had heard about this through his sources, you remember the Titanic director, he actually said it's, for the most part, a pretty safe industry, but this particular company, OceanGate, was trying to cut a lot of corners. And so they were using something called carbon-reinforced plastic and titanium. These are materials that really hadn't been well tested. The whistleblower back in 2018 was trying to say, hey, don't use this. And he actually got fired, and they sued, and then they countersued because they said, now, you know, it's out in the open that you're talking about our technology, and this is part of your NDA, non-disclosure agreement. Anyway, he was right. The whistleblower was right, and James Cameron was certainly right. This was not a good material to be using. But what's wild is that this was circulating in military circles that they thought they had heard an explosion, and yet it never made its way any further. And so, you know, people are asking why. Like, did it have anything to do with the coincidental timing of Hunter Biden pleading guilty? Now, we don't know the answer to that. I would certainly hope it did not. But I think that it's fair to ask the question, why didn't you guys say something? Why didn't, you know, why did you allow everyone's hopes to stay this high? Why did you allow all this money to be spent? Now, the flip side of it is, hey, you know, anytime something like this happens, it's worth having information. And so it's not as though the money is not being well spent. You want to figure out what happened. There was no black box on board. So, you know, how can you determine just exactly what went down? And part of that recovery process with the debris, et cetera, enables us to figure out what went wrong and pinpoint things like the carbon reinforced plastic and titanium, things that are cheaper, by the way, and lighter to be able to transport. And so you're saving money. You're saving money on the margin. This particular company also, the CEO, Rush, he didn't want to get the proper certification. He thought that would just slow him down. You know, who needs to deal with that kind of bureaucracy? Hey, I'm sorry, when it comes to people's safety, you deal with it. You deal with it. Anyway, all of these questions are surfacing right now because people kind of wonder, why didn't they tell us? And the timing is a little peculiar. That's all I'll say. As you know, we don't need to go too deep into that, but I think at some point, somebody ought to be answering these questions, because faith in these institutions is fragile enough. And when there are more things that just kind of leave people scratching their head and asking questions, well, you can't help but go there. Okay, let me look at some of your comments on this, because it seems like you guys are with me. Yeah, it's just sort of weird, right? Right, right. Nothing to see here. Chinese balloon, TCC is saying. The Chinese balloon, the military delayed their decision, perhaps. You know, the Chinese balloon, I do believe that the president was talking about that recently, trying to say, yeah, no, it really wasn't a big deal. I mean, I thought that Chinese spy balloon was kind of a big deal, too. There's a lot that they just don't want to tell us. And I get it, right? Mr. Jimmy John saying the sub diversion, wasn't it? It certainly was a diversion. You know, out of respect for those five souls yesterday, I had actually planned a program on Adam Schiff and on the Hunter Biden texts, et cetera. And because we really kind of just needed to take a moment and pause, we had just learned as I came live to air that they had passed away, it felt as though it was really kind of an inappropriate thing to do at that time. But hey, I did tell you, did I not? Just yesterday, I'm back and we're gonna get into this, because this is not right, what we are learning. And it is so important that they get a special prosecutor right now. It is so important that Congress figure out just exactly what Hunter Biden was up to. I'm not saying he was up to anything, but I'm just a realist, and I'm looking at that text message and I'm thinking, when I see something, just grabbing some water here from my none other than Live Free or Die cup, which is a shameless promotion. Actually, I didn't mean it to be this way. This is how you know I'm live. Because I do need to gulp my water, but Live Free or Die is an expression I grew up with in the state of New Hampshire. We're going to talk about that a little bit in a little bit as we get into sort of the Revolutionary War with my next guest. But look, we've got a total failure to have any faith in our institutions, from the banks to the politicians, to the Federal Reserve, to the military. And now, you know, people are like, hey, you know, don't worry about it. Hunter Biden, you know, Joe's proud of his son. I think that there are unanswered questions that we need to get to the bottom of. In the meantime, as this whole political circus continues, look at what's happened to our country. I mean, we've had record high inflation. It shouldn't still be this high. We've got the number one pick in the NBA draft being French. I'm sorry, wasn't that like an American? Nothing against the French. And by the way, this kid is an amazing player. He's like 7'4" and plays like a guard, right? He's fast, just amazing. He's going to the San Antonio Spurs. Those lucky guys. I mean, look, they had David Robinson back in 1987. They had Tim Duncan back in 1997. And with Tim Duncan, didn't they win like 5 titles right after that? I mean, they kind of really hit the lottery, literally hit the lottery. And they're getting this guy who's French and maybe the next best player since LeBron James. Realistically, he's probably got the most talent of anyone there in the draft. The second guy, that's the American from Alabama. That would be Brandon Miller, and he's going to the Charlotte Hornets. Brandon Miller has had quite a bit of scandal around him because there are all kinds of allegations that he actually provided the murder weapon for a young woman who had a 5-year-old child, and I guess his friend polished her off. I mean, just horrible, horrible, horrible story. Anyway, that would be the American guy, the number two pick. So, it's really something. And I think as we continue to lose this faith in institutions, it also includes education. Side note for you, the Hornets, that team was just bought by a private equity guy who came from CD&R. And He's been a very successful private equity investor, and I'm always amazed by this because, yes, the Democrats and by the Republicans too, both of them, they all want it. They all say, you know, we should play fair, and the Democrats want to tax everyone. That's the latest, by the way. There was a new report from the Joint Committee showing that everybody's taxes are going to go up, even though Biden said nobody over 400 grand. Well, that's actually not the case. And we can get into that actually next week with Stephen Moore, the economist, good friend, who used to be the economic advisor in the Trump administration. He's going to be on the program on Tuesday. So we'll dig into some of that. But what I just wanted to point out was the private equity investor that had the oodles of money to buy the Hornets, he gets taxed at a rate lower than a New York City cop. Like, that's fair, right? And I don't see the Democrats doing a darn thing about that one. That's a private equity, so-called, I call it the fat cat tax loophole, but it's called the carried interest tax loophole that is just a total joke. And you know what else is a total joke? Again, losing faith in the institutions. I'm talking about our schools. Have you seen the new studies that came out? So we're talking about how the U.S. really is falling behind. I mean, hey, when the number one draft pick is a guy from France and America is looking at test scores unlike anything we've ever seen in the past, 13-year-old kids, they've had these tests, national tests in math and reading going all the way back to 1971. And for the last 3 years, we have been declining. We are now at the lowest level. We are sinking fast, America, and there's a lot of reasons for it. some of which have to do with this cultural phenomenon, if you ask me, that's all about destroying who we are, forgetting our history, forgetting what got us here in the first place. Hard work, perseverance, optimism, the belief in the American dream. That's what this country has been all about ever since it was founded. Well, here to help weigh in on all of that, to give us a little bit of a history lesson, should we say, I'm so happy to welcome to the program Tim Barton. He is the president of Wall Builders. Wall Builders, which is the largest private collection of original founding father era documents, a tremendous work that you have assembled, Tim, in your own collection. And I know how devoted you are to keeping the American dream and the history of America alive in a positive way for everyone. So thank you for joining the show.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me on. It's a pleasure to be with you.
All right. I'm going to get to some of this, you know, the specifics of those test scores in just a second. But first of all, overall, like, how would you characterize what's happened in the last 3 years? When you look at American students that are declining so significantly at a rate that's unprecedented, what is this about? I feel like we've lost our way.
I think you're right. I think it's something, too, that it's, you know, to say we lost our way is a little relative because it almost implies that we don't know how we got here. But, you know, we would agree. The reality is that this was very intentional. There has been a movement by the left, by progressives. You actually can historically track this all the way back in the early 1900s when progressives took over education. You can go back to the Industrial Revolution when there were people like Rockefeller saying, you know, what we need in society, we don't need better thinkers. We need better workers in our factory. And we need people that will just take orders and do what they're told. And we saw this for sure during COVID when the American people, I mean, the product of what the progressives wanted to produce was happening when they don't need people that are really intelligent and smart. They need people that are just going to do whatever they're told. So if we're told, don't wear masks, and they wear one mask and wear two masks and get the vaccine. And well, you know, if you get it, you won't die. Well, actually you can take it. And you know, whatever the nonsense was, that you only
even,
need one.
No, actually, I mean, they wouldn't even, in terms of that, you couldn't even find any studies, and there were plenty of them, including from, you know, reputable institutions like Oxford University, or, you know, you couldn't access the studies. They didn't want you to see it because they didn't want you to question. And I guess that was whether you wanted to have the vaccine or not, you deserved the information. You deserved the ability to make a decision for yourself.
Correct. But this is where the point was, that they are trying to produce a society that doesn't think for themselves. They just do what they're told. And as you're saying, it's one thing if we have the information and you assess the information, you go, you know, for me, this makes the most sense. I should do this. It's one thing to have and process the information. But I say that in the sense of education, it's not a surprise. We look at the educational institutions and we see that they are failing. They were literally set up not to produce the brightest and the best anymore, contrary to what some people might think or want. There's still so many good educators who say, no, we want the best for our students. There's so many parents, man, I want the best for my students, but they don't understand that the way we are doing education now is so fundamentally changed that the entire idea of education is to produce a group of individuals that are not independent thinkers. And this is why, if you look at education, what we are doing, it's not performance-based. Every year you go to the next class and it's the next grade. And so many schools, what do you do with a really special gifted student that's so talented and they don't know how to navigate that? It's also why you see the growth of people that are pulling their kids out of public schools, which has happened a lot since COVID. There's a growth of private schools and charter schools and Christian schools and even the homeschool movement, because people are beginning to realize there's a failure in this. And it's also why, when you look at some of the polling out there right now, that Generation Z, the rising generation, has the lowest appreciation for America of any future or, excuse me, any previous generation. We've never had a generation that has been less proud to be American. I think the numbers are 16, 17% of Gen Z that say they're proud to be American. We're not giving them a good education. We're not giving them the reason to love their country. Well, we can still say, look, America's got problems, but America is still one of the most special nations in the history of the world. We are failing our students, but I think part of that system was intentionally set up this way to make people dependent and reliant on government so they would take orders and do what they're told. But I think now there are people recognizing the failures and brokenness of that system. There's people that are pulling their kids out of the system saying, we need to do something different. And that is good and healthy and what we should be doing to help solve these problems in America.
Yeah, incidentally, those same scores, not only were they just record lows on math and reading, they actually said we've never scored this low in terms of history and civics knowledge. So there's a thread there right across that, that actually gets right into to some of the, you know, the work that you've been doing to try and preserve this nation's history. Look, one of the things that is so special about America is this belief in America, in the American dream. And this is why people still want to come here today. And it's still probably the most fair country in terms of being a real meritocracy, where if you, you know, you work hard and you get some sweat equity and a little bit of intellect, and hey, you know what, a little bit of luck too, because you still need that. Then, you know, you need the wind at your back, as they say. You can get ahead. You can get ahead in this country. And I don't care where you're from, what color your skin is, whether you're male, female, or who the heck knows what else these days. You know what? If you work hard in the United States of America, you can still get ahead. You may not be able to for long if they're successful in this quest to change the entire system, which would effectively rig it for a certain group and leave a few on the top and a whole lot on the bottom. But still, it's the one place that we have that. I think about it a lot. Just, I have family that lives in France, and they have said to me, I have a cousin over there who was raised there. She's actually an American history and English teacher in France. And she said that she's always teaching this American dream because there's no other country like it. And I'm like, you don't have that in France? No, we don't have that in France. She tells me, we don't have it. It just doesn't exist. We don't have that sense of optimism that tomorrow's going to be a better day, right? And that is so critical, I think, to this sort of psychiatric health of a nation.
Yes.
But you know, this is part of what you've been doing. I'm no historian, but I was a history student in college and specialized actually in early America and founding fathers, Revolutionary War. Grew up in the great state of New Hampshire, where we were one of the original 13 colonies. So I was sort of surrounded by it my whole life, and I've always loved it. But you too were surrounded by it because your father started this, did he not?
Yeah, we grew up studying American history. My dad started collecting back in the 80s. And really, he started collecting because the first time he actually had read George Washington's farewell address, there was something that struck him, where George Washington said that religion and morality were the indispensable supports of our political prosperity in America. And he thought, that's so weird, because he'd always heard that guys like George Washington were atheists and agnostics and deists, and they didn't believe in God. And yet George Washington, in his farewell address, considered the most significant political address ever delivered, he said, you need religion and morality. And it led my dad to start thinking, have I been lied to? Have I misunderstood the founding fathers? He went back and started trying to find some of their original writings to read. And the more original writings he found, the more he read, the more he realized that the narrative that he had learned was not, in fact, correct. The founding fathers were not a group of terrible, evil, awful men. Now, they weren't perfect, but they weren't most of what they have been accused of over the last many decades, especially in recent decades. They're not guilty of most of those sins and crimes they've been accused of, but it was his hunger for truth that led him to begin collecting and studying and reading these documents. He started sharing these documents, and it really kind of grew and expanded to a lot of what we do today, where we try to present America's forgotten history and heroes, emphasizing the religious, the moral, and the constitutional foundations of the nation. And even as you're talking about it in France, where America's so different than maybe France, I have with me, this is the first printing of the original draft of the Declaration of Independence. So when Thomas Jefferson pins the original draft.
Oh my goodness. Wait, this, what is this?
Right. This is the first print. Now it's four pages. This is the first two pages. I have the third and fourth page in this portfolio, but these are the original printings the first printing of the original draft of the Declaration. What is fundamentally so unique about this, what makes America different. I know this is kind of weird trying to get this on camera as we're doing it, but in the second paragraph is where Jefferson lays out, he says, we hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal. They're endowed by their creator with certain inalienable rights, and among these are life, liberty, the pursuit of happiness, that to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just power from the consent of the governed. What is so significant about this? Why is America so fundamentally different? We're the first nation, the only nation that was built on the idea that there was a God and that God gave us rights and that government's primary job was to protect those rights. And so in America, we've always been a land of freedom and opportunity because we recognize that the very role of the government, the limitations of the government, are to protect the God-given rights that we have. And among those God-given rights are life and liberty, the pursuit of happiness. This is what has always been known as the American dream. It's what's made us different. And as we're talking about the original draft, one of the things worth noting is in the original draft, as Jefferson lays out all the reasons we should separate from the king, on the third page, the final draft, and or excuse me, the final grievance in the original draft of the Declaration, there was originally 24 grievances. And in the final draft, there's 27. But in the original draft, the final grievance is a grievance where Jefferson outlines, this is by far the largest. Jefferson spent the most time and attention on this. He said, the reason we need to separate from the king, this is his conclusion. He says, because the king is involved in the African slave trade. He's enslaving these innocent individuals. He's taking them to a new hemisphere. And he's enslaving. And what he says, he said this was piratical warfare. The king was doing what pirates would do, where they kidnap people and they capture them and they take them as slaves and they sell them. He said, this piratical warfare, the opprobrium of infidel powers, is the warfare of the Christian king of Great Britain. And the word Christian is printed and underlined. It's the first word, not in cursive. So he's drawing your attention to it, like saying this Christian king, this king claiming to be a Christian, is doing what these crazy pirates would do. He goes on and says, the Christian king of Great Britain determined to keep open a market where men should be bought and sold. And that word men is fully capitalized. He's talking about the African slaves. And he fully capitalizes and prints the word men. The reason this is important, when Jefferson wrote that all men are created equal, he was very clear who we're talking about. And it wasn't just for the white man. The narrative we hear today, that all the founding fathers were racist, they all were these pro-slavery individuals, that is fundamentally not true. Many of the founding fathers never owned slaves their entire life, but the majority of the founding fathers actually came out against slavery. It's literally in the original draft of the Declaration. The only reason it wasn't in the final draft is John Hancock said they would only include in the Declaration what was unanimously agreed to by all of the delegates from the 13 colonies. And there were two colonies. Jefferson wrote this, that there were two colonies that opposed that grievance against the slave trade and arguing for the humanity of the slaves. It was Georgia and South Carolina, because they said, we haven't tried to end the slave trade. We don't have a problem with that. That's not a grievance we have with the king. So that grievance did not make it in the final draft, but 11 of the original 13 colonies voted in favor of it. And this is where today people, we know so little history. So we believe so many things that are fundamentally not true. But as we look at America, America is one of the most special nations in the history of the world. And a lot of it goes back to the foundation that the founding fathers laid out. Our philosophy of government was that there was a God, that God gave us rights, and government's job is to protect those rights. And among those are life and liberty and the pursuit of happiness. This is the premise that has made America different than virtually any other nation in the history of the world. And for people that are even curious about the founding fathers, go back and read the original draft, because you see the very reasons they're arguing and articulating we should separate. And of course, you can read the final draft to see what they finally all unanimously agreed to. But even the accusations we hear today about how pro-slavery and racist they were, if we just knew some basic history, we would realize the vast majority of these accusations are not true. And America still is quite a special and unique nation. Even with all of our problems, there's a reason, for example, we have a major immigration problem on the southern border. And it's not just President Biden, although that is fundamentally the reason we have this mass immigration. But there's a reason people want to come to America, because there's still something fundamentally true, that there is still more opportunity, there's still more freedoms, there's still more prosperity here than anywhere else in the world. America still is one of the greatest nations in the history of the world.
For sure. I mean, we need to know that. I mean, I grew up, my dad came from a very big Irish Catholic family. He grew up on Stark Street in Portsmouth, New Hampshire, which I just found out just yesterday was named after General John Stark, who was a big deal, as you know, in the Revolutionary War, and was responsible for coining the term live free or die, which is the state motto in New Hampshire. I don't even think my father knew that, but I always wondered. So he grew up on Stark Street, which was named after General Stark, but he grew up extremely poor. The whole family, all eight of these kids, you know, they never had shoes. They never had anything. They depended heavily on the church for clothing and for food and a whole lot of things. All of them grew up to be incredibly, incredibly successful individuals. And it's just such a testament, right, to the wonder of this country. And I grew up hearing all kinds of stories about the odds that, you know, they had to overcome, but they did. And that was the moral of the story every single time. And as kids, we'd say, Dad, can you tell us more poor stories? We'd ask our aunts and uncles the same thing, because we loved hearing that, Tim. We loved knowing that you could start from nothing. And because of, you know, some hard work and some grit, and these were boys and girls, aunts and uncles, you know, they all became extremely successful. And it was because, you know what, they believed in themselves, and their parents believed in them, and their church believed in them, and their community believed in them. And the whole idea was, you're going to do better. And now all of a sudden, you know, kids today are hit with, well, you're not going to have, you know, you're not going to do better. You can't do better in this country because, you know, there's no chance for anybody. And I really think it's entirely the wrong approach. Don't you want to encourage kids with optimism and a can-do attitude?
Unquestionably, this is part of the reflection of the cultural Marxism that we are embracing. Because in Marxism, there were only two kinds of people. There were the oppressed and the oppressors. And initially, Marx, he was focusing on an economic theory. And actually, that was actually tried in early America back in the late 1800s, early 1900s. People tried to promote this Marxist idea. And they said, look, if you're poor in America, it's because somebody's oppressing you. But that never took hold because to the own example you just mentioned from your family, every single body right now listening, watching us, every single person, either their parents, their grandparents, or their great-grandparents, one of them started in dire poverty in America. And yet, because in America, it's a land of opportunity, everybody's been able to elevate their position along the way because this is still the land of opportunity. But that's why this economic theory of Marxism never stuck. And yet, this is now what we've shifted to, kind of like this critical race theory instead of critical theory, but it's still, it's cultural Marxism. And we are telling people that fundamentally they are either oppressed or they're oppressors. And that is a lie. First and foremost, we should not be teaching kids lies. And there's a lot of lies, unfortunately, that are being promoted in education today. We shouldn't be telling kids lies, but we should be giving them a vision of hope and opportunity that if you work really hard, and sure, we're all going to start at different places. Right. Some kids, their parents are incredibly wealthy. Some kids, right, you're still just hoping for a peanut butter jelly sandwich every day, yeah. Right? And God bless you. But this is the reality, is that no matter where you start, everybody can elevate their position and they can lay a new foundation for the generations that follow after them. Everybody can change the trajectory and story if they're willing to roll up their sleeves and do the hard work, because America still provides those opportunities. And part of it goes back to the foundation of our nation. We were founded as a nation that recognized and honored this notion as part of the free market and the capitalist system in America, that in capitalism, it's the closest thing to what MLK talked about, that in capitalism, we judge people not based on the color of their skins, but on the content of their character. We look at what somebody is able to accomplish and what they can produce. We don't care if you're a man or woman, right? We don't care your ethnicity. We don't care the culture and the heritage. What we care in the free market and capitalism is how you are able to contribute and provide and offer things along the way. But the reason that matters is that you're then not going to be held back because you're the wrong ethnicity, you're the wrong color of skin, you're the wrong gender. That's not what stops you from achieving and being successful in America. But if we give kids that vision and idea, it will stop them from ever trying, and they won't roll up their sleeves. They won't do the work. And then they won't accomplish all the things. I'm a Christian, and I fundamentally believe that God creates everybody on purpose and for a reason. And God gives us all different gifts and talents and abilities. And some of those gifts and talents and abilities, I believe that God's given inventions and creativity, and there could be cures for cancer in the rising generation that God's put vision in them. They could accomplish amazing things, but if we're telling them don't even try, then we won't get to enjoy the benefit of maybe some of the plans and purposes that God intended for that individual, because we're telling them don't even
this
try.
To religion.
The game is rigged. That's an evil thing to tell kids. We should be encouraging them.
And you are religious. I myself have become I grew up Catholic, now Congregationalist, but I just think it's so critical, especially, you know, as raising a family, for example, making sure that kids understand there's something much bigger, right, than anything going on in the here. There's something much bigger out there, and having sort of a sense of that, right, is so critical. And you look at the depression among children today, you look at what's happening to our society, it breaks my heart. But I think about how religion has been kind of scorned. And, you know, look, I maybe it's not for everyone, but I'll tell you, a little religion goes a long way. And knowing that there's something else more than just you, right, out there, and that there's a purpose, that God has a purpose for you, as you just stated, it does a lot to help people, especially in times of struggle. And did we not go through enormous struggles in 2020 and into 21? And we're still suffering from it today. And yet bars were open and churches were closed. I mean, it's wild to me to think about that.
It really is. And one of the things, too, that, again, I'm going to go back to the Declaration of Independence. Our philosophy of government is that there's a God and God gives us rights. One of the challenges also, as we become an increasingly secular society, is if we no longer believe there's a God, then there's really not God-given rights that we're going to kind of recognize and defend. But if there's not God-given rights, that means all rights come from the government, which means they can regulate all of those rights. And this is where America was just built on a different foundation. We were built on the idea that government's not the one that comes up with our rights, that they're not the one that dictates and determines what freedoms we do and don't have. Their job is to protect the things that we have. And this is the founding fathers in the Declaration. The opening line is the unanimous declaration of the 13 United States of America. This was unanimous. Every founding father, with all their disagreements, and as people that study history, they'll know the founding fathers disagreed about a lot of stuff. They argued all the time. But this is what they were unanimous on. They said, we all agree that this fundamental premise that there is a divine creator and he gave us rights. Our rights come from God, not the government, not the king. And the more secular we become, the more we look to government. And so when the government says, hey, you don't have the right to go to work, you don't have the right to have a business. And people are like, oh, I guess we don't. That's crazy. The government does not get to determine that. They are not the one who originated our rights. Their role is to protect our God-given rights. And this is where, even if people aren't sure what they believe about God or religion, you better be understanding of the notion that we still want the idea of God-given rights, because if we don't preserve and protect the notion of God-given rights, then ultimately all we're doing is saying whatever political party is in power, they get to determine what freedoms we do and don't have. And that's a scary and dangerous place that we do not want to be in, because that's what happens in third world countries, banana republics, dictatorships. America's never been that, and we don't want to become that. We need to preserve the notion that there is a creator who gave us rights, and that government's job is to protect those rights. That is the philosophy of government that has made America the most special, unique place in the history of the world.
Why is the left so obsessed with gay? Is it about power? I mean, you look at, for example, I don't know if it's still on their website, but Black Lives Matter, which incidentally is dealing with some serious financial struggles. They spending a little too much on themselves. It's that whole Marxism, you know, comes back to bite you in a big way. Anyway, they were very negative on the nuclear family, really wanted to see the destruction of the nuclear family. I don't understand it, because to me, every American should want what's best for the country. I think marriage and children and family units are just such a critical part. Listen, you know, it's not easy to raise kids on your own. I don't wish that really on anyone. Having a partner is so critical. And it's study after study would show you that children who come out of two-parent households do much better in life. They just do. They're set up. It's easier. Again, I think you can accomplish anything still in this country. But you've got a better, you know, set of facts when you're starting out in the world if there's two parents there to help you through things and two parents that can help each other through things. Why would anybody want to get rid of that?
Yeah, to your point, you know, it's something that is actually pretty statistical, easy to prove with the value of having a mom and dad in the home. Because even saying two parents, a mom and dad is still different than two moms or two dads in the sense of what it produces in kids statistically, how kids do mental health, emotional health, how they do academically when it comes to even crime, not committing crime or violent crimes. It's very significant what the stats show. And this is not really questionable. It's also true, as you mentioned. I mean, marriage is not easy. Raising kids is not easy. These are hard things, but strong marriages help produce strong families, and strong families help produce strong communities, societies, and ultimately nations. We should be promoting the idea of what would make our nation the strongest, and that is strong families and therefore strong marriages. But where
and look, people and, are, you know, and I get it, by the way, like, you know, if you're in a abusive situation, like I want to just caution, like it's not necessarily always going to work for everyone. Hopefully it does,
right.
But you want to at least start with the premise, right? That, you know, that it is an ideal that hopefully should be aspired to, because it will make your life a little bit easier and your children's lives
right.
easier. And I think yes. that, you know, the idea that, you know, church and community helps all support that. It's sort of this, you know, very fluid kind of thing, right? Where, you know, the church is encouraging something, the community is encouraging, it's helping with the societal norms, which, by the way, from an economics perspective, even gets you back to things like property rights and making sure that a woman and children are provided for. It's all part of sort of the, I guess, that having sort of a society that works in harmony together.
Absolutely. Yeah. And to be clear, right, we're not definitely not trying to disparage anybody that's had to go through a tough relationship or had gone through divorce. And we're not disparaging that. But if you're having an aspiration, right, I think everybody, even the people that have been in terrible marriages, they would go, man, I wish I could have been in a great marriage. Right. I mean, that's still an aspiration. But the point is that this is what we used to know helped make a society strong. And under Marxism, they say that kids belong to the government. We've actually seen, right, Democrats say this. It's part of what led to Youngkin's election back in Virginia in 2021, when you have Democrats saying, hey, parents should have no say in their kids' education, right? Kids belong to the government. That's a crazy thought, but that's a Marxist and a communist idea. And this is what we are seeing promoted, is we don't need families because kids should belong to the government, which, again, it's just a very different premise and philosophy in the way life should work and life should function. And when people are promoting this Marxism, when we promote socialism and communism, people also should understand that these are the very ideas that in the 20th century alone led to the murder of more than 100 million humans in society. Whether we talk about Russia or China or Germany, or we can look at all these nations, this is the ideology that's led to those evils. And today the argument is, well, but in America, we would do it different, right? We will fix socialism. It's going to work here for the first time of anywhere.
I'm sorry. You know, we've seen that movie before a few too many times.
Right.
Go around the world, well, take your pick. You know, human
exactly.
beings, I'm sorry, you know, and maybe this is why they need a little religion. Well, you know, we're kind of instinctively selfish and we have to fight sometimes against those instincts. But I think the great thing about capitalism, the beauty of it, is it sort of recognizes that human beings have those tendencies and tries to actually turn it on its head and say, okay, well, let's use that to the advantage of society. Whereas with Marxism, it's like, okay, well, let's forget those things exist, except, of course, well, they do. So then the people in charge, and, you know, you look at Black Lives Matter, I just mentioned, with their extraordinarily expensive homes and, you know, some of the relatives being on the payroll. Like, look, you know, that's what happens. And you look at what the Castro family in Cuba and the money they had, or,
yeah,
you know, Venezuela and Hugo Chavez and his daughter was loaded. I mean, those are the people that wind up with all the money, and everybody else, good luck.
And this is where, like, socialism, Marxism, it's not a bad system if you're the one on top. In fact, it's great for you because you get all the money. It's just miserable for everybody underneath. And you know, one of the arguments that I would even point out, when we know right now the majority of college students, I've seen polling up to 75% of college students have a favorable view of socialism and this general ideology. I think we have a basic misunderstanding, because any nation, any people group that's embraced these ideals, it has reduced freedom and prosperity. And I think you ask any college kids, hey, do you want freedom? Do you want money? And they're all going to say yes. Then you don't want socialism, because
but
nowhere in the world.
So here's an interesting
socialism
study that just came out of Princeton. This was blew me away, because, you know, Princeton, you know, good school, I guess, you know, like, you know, Harvard, Princeton, Yale, right? The Ivies are a whole new boat these days. But anyway, the students were polled there, and the overwhelming majority there felt like the First Amendment was too much, right? That in the case of any hate speech or, you know, a controversial speaker, in many cases, they voted that it was fine to even use violence to prevent that speaker from speaking. And I'm like, oh my gosh, like, how much the world has changed in
yes.
the last 2-3 decades. I mean, think about how much it's changed since your dad first founded Wall Builders. It's mm-hmm. been massive, because the idea that we don't value our basic freedom of speech, and you think it's okay to maybe use violence to
right.
shut someone down because you don't agree with them.
Yeah.
That's a different
and this
America.
Is actually, yeah, and this is why we exist at Wall Builders, trying to restore that biblical and moral foundation. And by saying that, like, even some of the basic frameworks of capitalism, it's embracing some of those thoughts that really you go back to the pilgrims and they're the ones that start the first free market system in America, but they were applying the Bible to do that. Now, you don't have to be a Christian to be in the free market or capitalism, but there was a biblical moral foundation in America that was shaped by the Bible. And then restoring those constitutional principles, this is why we exist, to say, hey, we should be moral people, right? We shouldn't punch people in the face we disagree with, that there's some constitutional freedoms and protections. And we are seeing a decay of this in society around us. Now, fortunately, we also are seeing an awakening, because since COVID, there are so many people waking up going, what is happening right now? We've seen a resurgence of parents getting involved at school board meetings, parents getting involved at city council. In fact, prior to COVID, most people didn't even know the name of their mayor, right? We didn't know who these people are, but when they start shutting us down, all of a sudden, Americans begin waking up and saying, we don't like this. And the fact that we are getting involved, this is how we solve the problem. We solve the problem when we wake up and get involved. The reason America has derailed and gone the wrong way for decades is because so many of us have sat back and we haven't been involved in the process. And we see that with elections and polling, because even if you look at elections, you never even have 50% of the nation voting in elections. You will see now a resurgence, especially at local elections, where the local elections, the average local election is like 3% of the local population votes for the mayor and the city council and school board. Well, now we're seeing 7, 8, 9%, which is still a tiny minority, but you're seeing people wake up and start to care about this again. And the more we start to care about this, the more I think we will start to see things turn in the right direction. And just one anecdote thought, as we look back as historians, we look back at the American Revolution. In the American Revolution, the Americans were outnumbered. They were outgunned. There was only about 25% of Americans that were supportive of the revolution. And of those 25%, the estimates are it was only 7, 8, 9, 10% that actually...
That's a very interesting stat, by the way, that you just mentioned. Only 25, because there were a lot of people that were like, look, you know, just pay the taxes, you know, and get on with it.
Yeah, and so estimates are it's between 25 to 30% that were on the side of the British, 25 to 30% that were on the side of the Patriots, and the majority were in the middle going like, hey guys, like, somebody figured out, we don't care, we just don't want problems. But even of the Patriots, it was only 7, 8, or 9% of the population that opposed the British in the Revolution. And actually in the Revolution, the Americans lost the majority of battles. George Washington was only part of 17 battles. He only won 6 of those. We lost the majority of the battles in the Revolution, but because we kept showing up, because we kept fighting, we eventually won the war. And I think this is what we're starting to see as Americans are starting to show up, as we're starting to push back against some of this cultural Marxism, against some of this nonsense. I think we are going to win this war, but I don't think we're there yet. I think Americans are beginning to wake up. And the more we wake up, the more we get involved. If we will stay persistent, if we will persevere, we can win this war. We've got great historic examples. You don't need the majority of the population. You need a consistent, dedicated, perseverant group of individuals who will continue to show up. And if we do, we can win these cultural battles. We can restore the constitutional principles.
You're a big part of that. What you guys are doing is a big part of that, I would just say. And I encourage people to go check out your podcast, Wall Builders. But you just showed us there a draft of the Constitution, which really negates all these theories that the founding fathers were a bunch of racists that didn't care. I mean, you just showed us, and it's fascinating, that they were pointing to the King of England and citing the fact that he was engaged in the slave trade as one of the reasons why he was not a good Christian. And these are stories that really are not being told because it's not expedient to do so. I think it's amazing what you're doing. I think it's incredible that you've suffered from some negative, I guess to be expected, but sort of just negative attacks. I told you off camera before we began, I read an article in some super liberal nonsense magazine blog thing that was really attacking you because you didn't have all the history degrees that they would have thought you should have. So you didn't go to Princeton or something. And to me, it just was mind-boggling because when did a historian have to have a degree? When you consider that you're in a vault, are you not? I should tell the viewers, you are in a vault that is protecting those documents. You're actually holding them. How cool. Like holding them yourself. You've read them. You are so steeped in this, so far above and beyond what anybody with the PhD from the Ivy is doing. But you're threatening, keep in mind, Tim, are you not, to the system.
Yeah.
Because you have a different narrative than, say, the 1619 Project. Which,
right.
By the way, aren't historians either, are they?
Well, no, and that's a great point because, right, even the people that would
sense, in the PhD, Ivy League sense.
Right. No, they would criticize us for not having the right credentials, but they don't criticize anybody on their side who doesn't have the right credentials because it fits the narrative, right? It's like the Bill Gates who's giving us medical advice and people are like, wait a second, you guys, y'all don't have, you're not doctors. Well, neither's Bill Gates, right? But as long as you're on their side, they're not going to criticize you if you promote the narrative they like. But if you're on the other side and you promote a narrative they don't like, then they're going to find reasons to attack you. And this goes back to the ad hominem attack. When if you can't debate something on the merits of the argument, right? If you can't say, well, you're wrong historically, the way you presented something is historically wrong. Well, that's different than saying, right, this, don't trust this person. They don't have a degree, which really is you saying that you can't show that the argument's historically wrong. So you need to do the ad hominem thing and attack the individual. We see a lot of that because they don't have the leverage to stand on from the historic perspective, because what we're promoting is actually true and it doesn't fit the narrative of what they're promoting. That's why the attacks come.
I'm so impressed by what you're doing. Can we see that document one more time before I let you
Absolutely.
Go?
Absolutely. Yes. So this is the third page.
You're on the show, of course, today, but I am going to make sure I save this and play it again for everyone on the 4th of July, because that is just so darn cool. So darn cool. I get excited when it's going to be such an amazing thing to hold those documents and to see that and with their handwriting. And I think it's great. I love what you're doing and I'm just thrilled you came on today.
Thanks so much. A pleasure being with you.
Thanks so much. Good to see you, Tim. You can check out Tim's podcast, wallbuilders.com. He's got a radio show. It's all over the country as well. Go check out wallbuilders.com. You can learn so much more. Thank you again.
Thank you.
Was that not awesome? I mean, totally awesome. And look, I'm a total history buff. And I grew up in New Hampshire, very proud of one of the 13 colonies. And it was just, I remember even as a kid, like, They occasionally take you, this is kind of morbid, but like occasionally we do like a cemetery tour, right, for school. Very morbid. But the big thing was you would take a piece of paper and you would trace, put a crayon up and you could like see the year that the gravestone was from. Like in some cases, you're going back to a long time ago, back to the 1600s. And, it's just so important that we not lose sight of that we not lose sight of who we are and all that we've overcome. I do believe that you have to understand history, not through the lens of today, but through the lens of the time. And even having that lens of the time, as Mr. Barton just explained, you know what? Our founding fathers were not as bad as they're trying to make them out to be. I was reading your comments, you guys, during, it's not easy. I'm trying to conduct an interview and speak extemporaneously and read all your comments as well. But thank you for everybody saying how much you appreciated the show tonight and the interview. I'm so glad to see that again, really enjoying this format. I just want to shout out to David, who is I don't know if you're here for the first time, David, David O'Brien, but yes, it's a very cool format. And it's a great opportunity for us to all speak directly. And I feel like I have just a terrific group on here, a very loyal group that some of you, I think about Leslie, who was one of our first people on this little channel. And when we didn't have anybody and I couldn't figure out how to work the microphone and I would count on her to tell me whether or not there was any sound. I was actually counting on one of you earlier too, because I think we had a little audio level issue, but it's just a very different kind of experience, an experience I really like and really value, because it's no longer just me speaking into a television screen with a teleprompter that I'm reading. I mean, it's a very different thing. A lot of you, thank you for one of you said that you've been watching me since 2009 back on CNBC when I hosted a show. Actually, Larry Kudlow was there with me as well. We used to do a show that got into a lot of the economic policy issues and market issues, of course, of the day. And it was quite something. I was there even during 2008, 2007. So I was looking at the front lines, right, of the financial crisis. And interesting time, a frightening time, frankly, for our country. So I know so many of you are very passionate about that still. And this record debt level is insane. And there's no willingness really to deal with it. And I think that that's going to come with a lot of repercussions down the road. I do worry about us going into the rest of the year and the Federal Reserve saying it still believes it has to raise interest rates. I don't know how it's going to do it. Joe Biden's not going to be too happy about that one, right? Because the last thing a politician wants is the Federal Reserve raising rates as we go into an election year. It will slow the economy down, but the economy is already kind of slowing, and yet we have inflation. So that is that's the sort of stagflation environment that people so fear, and that is a reality. Anyway, I do love having you all here, and I do love this format. It's a very different kind of experience, I think, for all of us. And we don't have as many bells and whistles, right? You don't have all the graphics, and you don't have as much video, but I think all of you are interested in the content itself, as am I, and it really encourages us all to put our listening caps on. So if you haven't subscribed to the audio version of this podcast, it will be going up momentarily. There's a little bit of a delay because, like I said, I'm live on Facebook, I'm live on YouTube, but there's a little bit of a delay in the Apple podcast. Do me that favor, though. Go over, just, you know, subscribe, just follow. It's all free. I would love to have you over there as well. It helps the algorithms, the more people we can get. So thank you to all of you who have been here from the beginning. John Palmer, good to see you again. Good to see so many sort of steady people always coming back. Stevie, I think that was you that talked about throwing Bud Light in the Boston Harbor there, having a little tea party. I love that. I was finding myself almost laughing out loud. I am going to give you guys the link to my website, which, forgive me, it's in the process of being redone. So don't be too harsh on it. But the important thing is that there is a pop-up there at the TrishReganShow.com. TrishReganShow.com, there is a pop-up, and you can sign up for alerts. And what we're trying to do is put a little alert system. Alphonse, who was here with us yesterday, was highly recommending that. He said he gets that from some others. So I thought, well, we can do that too, right? So if you're interested in being here and participating in these live conversations, go to TrishReganShow.com. Sign up for the email, and I will make sure that we try to always get some kind of alert out to you when I am here. Anyway, great to see you all. I hope you have a wonderful, wonderful weekend, and I may be back. I may be back. All more reason to sign up for those alerts. Again, so nice to see you, and we will talk some more very soon.